episode of the Monday Mile podcast. We are in central London, and by that I mean central, Leicester Square. So excuse the noise, but enjoy that hustle and bustle. This podcast is all about finding out what makes people tick, their secrets to success, and how and why, when motivation is at rock bottom, do they pick themselves back up and continue to strive. So stick your headphones in and join us whilst we walk and talk. Today's guest is Chris Stark. He's known for his former days at Radio 1 as a part of the Scott Mills Show and now sits in the hot seat over at Global as Capital FM's breakfast show co-presenter and executive producer. Chris Stark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for coming to visit.
We are literally standing outside your new home.
Yeah, it's super new. I've only been doing this job a short time now. But I'm excited to show you around. I don't really know my way around this area yet. This is like, it's quite far from where I was at Radio 1. And I'm aware at the start of this, it's not very exciting because there's a lot of kind of workmen and bins being taken out and stuff like that.
It's real.
But
it's
just
raw.
Bear with it. I'll tell you what's really cool is this stuff every day right in the centre outside Global. This is where they do all the big movie premieres for the cinema next door. So it's often quite cool. You see them setting stuff up and...
See Piers Brosnan cruising down the street.
You know,
the
I'm
Rock.
Never normally about by the time it gets to the evening where the actual good stuff's happening. But I love being around here. And I used to come here as a kid and my auntie would take me here and show me the Christmas lights and stuff like that. So it's really cool to be working here now, although it's very early starts.
I can imagine.
Very early.
How early are we talking?
So I get up at 4, which is challenging.
That is the middle of the night, Chris.
I know. And, you know, I'm more of a kind of a DJ that's used to being out at that time rather than necessarily getting up to work. And also, my family situation is so different to when I first started at Radio 1. So getting up first thing in the morning and leaving my family and trying to get yourself out of bed and getting out, and sometimes it can be cold and a bit rainy. It feels like a mad thing to be doing at 4 in the morning. But there's not one day I haven't got up and just got up straight away, because I think inherently it's just a job that I love doing. I feel so lucky to have.
That's freaking cool to say that. You've just made quite the transition.
Yeah.
BBC boy at heart. Over 10 years there?
Yeah, so I did 10 years. I mean, the thing is, I've wanted to get into radio from such a young age. So actually, I did quite a long time at Radio 1, and then moving to Global and moving to Capital, it just felt like the perfect next step at the next time. I love what we're doing here, by the way. You just go for a ramble.
We're going,
What's
we're running.
What's the deal with the traffic and that? We just carry on. Okay.
We're commanding
okay,
traffic
cool.
here, Chris. We're
this
commanding
is cool.
traffic.
This is cool. It's such a weird way to do a podcast. I love it. We'll just go for a wander.
Just a little stroll.
Yeah, so I did 10 years at Radio 1, and then it felt like it was the right time to move and go do something exciting. And then before Radio 1 as well, I was spending the previous 10 years to that really trying to get into radio and learning about it and doing anything I could to do radio. So I feel very lucky to have so far had a career which has kind of come in waves of new opportunities and new projects. And going to Global so far has been just the most amazing thing to go and do.
Climbing the ranks, not just as co-presenter of The Breakfast Show, but also executive producer. Now that's quite surreal.
Yeah, but I think it's my job has always been a funny one. Like, I'll be the first to admit I'm not actually a very good presenter, but I've always been so lucky that I've realised kind of what I'm good at and maybe what I'm not so good at. And that's been a huge process in itself. But a lot of what I did at Radio 1, it's hopefully a lot of what I can bring to Global, is actually more about the stuff I do behind the scenes. And some people might be aware of that, and a lot of people probably aren't. So I think when I moved to Capital, it was very nice of them to offer me, you know, a role on their breakfast show, which is just a phenomenal show, and I'm so proud and so pleased to be part of. But also to kind of embrace everything that I was doing at Radio 1 and recognise that when I moved over here. So it's kind of the job I've always done, because I love being so involved in making radio. It's not so much about the presenting side of it. For me, it's about being creative and having fun and coming up with fun ideas. That's my favourite thing about my job. And yeah, so I think it was really nice that that got recognised when I moved there. I know it's a bit of an odd one on paper because that title, I think, makes you sound a bit boss-like, but it's not that. It's more just, I think they wanted to acknowledge what I was doing as they saw it in radio and then recognised that when it came to moving a global.
That's incredible though, because that's really giving you a platform and opportunity to inject your own creativity into the show, right?
Yeah, I think so. And the guys have been so good in embracing me. And ultimately, radio is like, it's such a special place to work. It's different to most TV. You kind of get given a script and you're kind of part of someone else's ideas and work. And the great thing about radio, and it's what I mean, Scott did so successfully at Radio 1, and I'd like to think it's what I'm good at, is the fun ideas. And radio's an excuse to go and do lots of really silly stuff. And
That is how we first came across each other. Mm. I came on your Five Live show, Blow Your Minds for Pizza. Chris, now I have to say, since being rewarded a pizza by you live on air, I've now been subscribed to Southgate Domino's delivery for the past year and a half.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. I get a text every week.
That's great. And that was just one little feature that we did on that show. And it's sometimes like, if I've had a few drinks and I get really deep and meaningful with things, I sometimes like to have a little think about fun stuff that we've done or weird stuff that we've done. And I do sometimes think, like, if something was to ever happen to me, I just love that there's this, like, stuff. I've always worried what my kids will find on YouTube about me, because I grew up on radio, really, and a lot of my life is on there. I've always worried about that, but I'm actually kind of really happy that if something was to happen to me, that they'd see that, you know, I did life in maybe a slightly different way and it was fun, and, you know,
you can see
the time of my life
through doing a little YouTube trail of you that you inject a lot of passion into everything you do. Let's throw it back, because you must get sick of this. That Mila Kunis interview, how many times does that come up? But also, how incredible was that conversation in projecting you to where you are today?
Yeah, the Mila Kunis interview was something that, it was at a point where I was desperately trying to get into Radio 1. I went and did this interview, you know, in case you haven't seen this, I went and did this interview with Mila Kunis, and I was kind of woefully unprepared, and I didn't really know what I was doing. I'd never gone and done one of these junket interviews, as they're called, before. So I turned up at the hotel and I kind of went into panic mode, and it was in front of Mila Kunis. Didn't really know anything about the film, didn't really know much about her, if I'm honest, but I knew that, like, my mates kind of fancied her and, like, she was an amazing actress. That's all I really knew. And then I just kind of went into panic mode, because you're in such a clinical environment, you're in this sort of junket situation, which is weird as, you know.
Was that your first junket?
First junket. So you turn up in a hotel, loads of PR people are getting in your way. They're really strict with you. They're like, you've got 7 minutes and you can't ask this and you can't ask this and you can't ask this. And you're kind of thinking, like, well, what can you do to have fun? And I just went violently off message and started inviting her for Nando's and, like...
Where did that come from?
Don't know. I just sort of... I saw an opportunity and I just wanted to talk to her the same way that I would talk to people in the pub. And I didn't realise that that was quite a unique thing to happen. And at the time, I remember this PR lady in there just being really angry with me. And afterwards, I went out and I phoned Scott Mills and was like, I'm really sorry, mate, we won't be able to use this interview. I've really screwed it up. And then we put it out and he was like, no, I'm sure it's fine, I'm sure it's fine. And then we put it out, and it just started to go massive. Like, it was getting just this ridiculous amount of views, and I was suddenly getting thousands of tweets from people talking about it. And then I would click on YouTube, and every time I clicked on it, it was going up like another 50,000 every day. Like, it was something weird was happening, and this thing started going massively viral. And next thing you know, the BBC press department are coming up to me and saying, "Right, Good Morning America wants to talk to you."
Dude, that's
like
surreal.
CNN, like it's these Australian radio stations. It was, I think, people just like to see it, a kind of what felt like quite a relatable chat between two people that were like very different.
Do you think that's the art to a good broadcast, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, is actually making it relatable?
I don't know, because I think a lot of it, I don't want to say that there was like a higher art to it, because there wasn't, because the truth of it, I was in panic mode and just chatting to her. But I think what it did is it suddenly made me feel that for someone that was trying to get into radio and really, like, I really, really wanted to be in radio and be on radio and be working at the time Radio 1, but just to have a career, it suddenly shone a light on me, and it kind of gave me a place, because up until then, I felt like I almost had to be the new Scott or the new Greg or, you know, these breakfast presenters that I grew up listening to, Taran, or there's so many to name, Johnny Vaughan, like, you know, great presenters. And what that did in that moment was kind of go, there's interest in you just for being yourself, rather than like you having to be better than what you are or what I viewed I needed to do to be better.
That's incredible to learn that so early on in your career, because I think it can take years to discover that authenticity, genuinely
You know what, Amy? Like, I think then I lost it, though, because then it almost went the other way. I was like, oh, everyone found that really funny with that interview. So then you try and force that sort of thing.
Oh, really? So would you say you took it too far?
I don't know if I took it too far. I think what I did was I suddenly felt like maybe I had to play up to this one thing that everyone really, really liked. And then it was a bit confusing, because everything you were suddenly working on, like, you suddenly get given a Channel 4 show and you suddenly get given all these things, and you're like, well,
that was a one-off.
Is this just because of like this one interview? But like, what about the last 10 years of like the radio stuff? And actually, what I've since realised is I think it was all just me discovering myself and working out how I could best represent myself on radio. And all of it's real. And I think it's like anything. I think it's like if someone goes on a night out, or, you know, you go and do a job interview, you are yourself, but you kind of do exaggerated versions of yourself, or you know the facets of your personality that match certain situations. I don't know. Sometimes I felt like I was making myself sound more stupid. I'm sure there'll be people listening to this that are going like, you're quite stupid.
That's so interesting, though, that dynamic, because I'd say if you flip the switch, the majority of presenters, broadcasters, they'd probably do the opposite. They'd polish the rough ends.
Yeah.
Whereas you exposed yourself in that situation, so we're almost expected to do the opposite.
Yeah, I think so. And it's something I often think about. I wouldn't change anything, of course, but
how do you find the balance now?
Well, it's so much better, because what I've learned is you can be your, I mean, what I've ultimately learned is I shouldn't be so harsh on myself, because there is a place for anyone to represent themselves. I think the most, it's like whenever someone asks me, how do they get into radio or how do they get into TV and this kind of thing? I think like my best advice with it is work out what you kind of want to talk about and represent, rather than being a good presenter. And maybe I was joining at a time where Radio 1 had these phenomenal presenters, and you have this sort of kind of inferior thing that kicks in when you're in the same room as Moyles, Scott, Fern, you know, like people that I've grown up listening to. I think what I've learned is over time, you know, you can be yourself. And I think this applies for anyone in a lot of different jobs, because you do challenge yourself. And, you know, like, I'm a dad, and when we were expecting my little girl, I did find that I kept that back from Radio 1. And I talk about this now, but I didn't talk about it at the time. And I think a large part of that was potentially because I had this role of being a dad, which I took so seriously, and I was so scared because it was all a bit of a surprise and I didn't know what I was meant to be doing. And I also had this job where I wanted to put everything into it, and I wanted to be this presenter, I guess you'd call it. But actually, the truth is, I just wanted to be on radio and in radio and doing the fun things that we're doing. And I would allow myself to have the piss taken out of me on the radio and do funny things and embarrassing things. But at the same time, I'm thinking in my head, well, you've got to be a dad. And like, how do those two things balance up? And I don't want people to take the piss out of my little girl or me being a dad. So I kept it apart. And I think the best thing about how I feel right now is I feel I can do everything together. I feel quite at peace with the fact I'm not going to be the next Bruce Forsyth. Although I'm never going to be that. I'm not going to be this glossy presenter. I'm going to try and best represent myself in an honest way, in the best way I can. But also the most important thing in my life is being a dad.
This is incredible.
It's quite weird.
I've taken a lot from that already. That's really interesting, the balance in having a laugh and then fatherhood and then marrying the two. And at the same time, why should you need to speak openly in a public space about your private family life?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But Has it grounded you, having a family?
Definitely, but I always felt quite grounded. I was really lucky that I had good family around me the whole time. But you know, I was going and doing something different to anything my family has ever really done. And yeah, I think having a family, I think what's really nice now is I'm more settled in myself and I'm confident in just being the person I am. And I've also very much realised, and it's easy to say on this side of things, but I'm not defined by, you know, one job. I'm defined by the things that I enjoy doing and kind of the passions I have, you know, coming up with fun stuff in radio and doing the radio shows that we do. But I'm way more defined by, you know, being a dad. And yeah, I'd like to think I balance it out quite well. I do sometimes feel like a bit of a shitty dad though, because I do absolutely love radio so much and I love what I do. So sometimes in my head I'm like, are you doing too much of that at the expense of, you know, like some of my mates go and do a job and they go and do a job and they finish it and they go home and they're about weekends and stuff like that, you know.
What does a normal day for you look like? Because I can imagine it changes day to day. You've obviously got that morning structure of the breakfast show, but that's, you're waking up at the death hour.
No, but loads of people do that. I think it's
but it's after it's not, that.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception that like you just do the radio show and then you're done.
No,
but I
not,
by no means want to.
Like, that's what I mean. How do you balance it?
No, but Amy, like, I by no means want to like make out that my job's hard. It's not hard. I'm just very lucky that over a few years, like I've built up enough of a reputation that people want to employ us. And like, it's not hard. Being honest, as a parent, it is sometimes hard getting up early, doing the show, doing everything that happens after it, doing anything, any other jobs you have. And I have a few now, and I'm lucky to have that. And then trying to be there for the school run and being a dad.
Are you going to make that happen today?
Yeah, I do it. I try and get there every day for 3 p.m.
Even after the pub?
Yeah, but like, I can never stay in a pub for more than one. Like, God.
Balance, right?
Mate, my days of being able to do long nights in the pub, like, maybe that's one very good thing about this breakfast show is being able to limit the evening boozing so much.
You've got a great excuse to bail early on every pub visit. Yeah. I've heard you speak quite openly about being a co-presenter. You're a co-presenter on your former BBC show and now working at Capital. As a co-presenter, it's all about enhancing the other presenter. Is that fair to say?
That's totally right. Yeah. And I think like that's where I've been conflicted in the past. Like, you suddenly get a bit of a taste for it and you suddenly get in the BBC and the days of doing hospital radio or student radio and all of this sort of thing, the ambition starts happening and you get your foot in the door at Radio 1, then suddenly you feel like, right, I need to click into a gear and become this presenter. And actually, I'm not going to be that guy. And I think what I've done quite well, do you know, if I'm really honest with you, Amy, I think I'm a good presenter. Right, in a traditional sense, I've learned a lot and I've learned from the best. But I've learned that what I'm very good at is being a very good number two, which is a kind of weird thing to say, but...
But if you could be the best number two that ever lived...
You know, that might be it.
That's the one.
Which I'm not claiming I am.
What are the qualities of a co-presenter?
Well, this is it. I think a lot of what I do has been... I've been very lucky to work with some incredible people, and ultimately I'm involved in a lot of projects that have like a big name attached to them. And then really it's about looking at that as a brief and going, you know, what are the fun things that we can do with them? What are the ideas that can help facilitate them as a presenter? So with Roman Kemp, it will be different to Peter Crouch. And, you know, that podcast has been very successful. And a lot of what we do are some quite amazing things. You know, at the moment, we're planning for our live event called Crouch Fest. And so for me, it's like you sit in a pub or you sit in an office and you have to come up with a load of ideas about what could happen at Crouch Fest. And you end up coming up with like all sorts of random stuff. But I think that's what me as a number two does, is about, it's about being able to allow people like Scott. I felt he was at his best when I could take care of some of the behind the scenes stuff.
The fluff.
On the show.
Take the weight. And yeah. I think it also, as a skill set, as a person, it requires an element of selflessness.
Yeah.
To give yourself, to enhance, essentially them, to look a little better.
Yeah, well, that's, I think that's well, it.
Saying that, I was having a little think about this. This must make you a very, very good wingman when it comes to attending a party or an event.
Yeah, maybe.
Would you say that, sir?
Maybe. I think you're kind of right in some ways. Like, I think there is a real acceptance and a no. And I think a lot of people know what I do. I find it's a really funny level with me. I think you either don't have a fucking clue who I am, which is absolutely fine,
yeah.
Or you know who I am because you like one of the projects that I'm involved in. And I think that's such a lovely, like, I feel so lucky to be in that space. I think that number two thing you said is really interesting because I don't actually know the best way to answer it, because it's such a weird job, basically saying your job is to try and make other people look good, because I think that's what I've always done well at. Like, I've recognised that other people can do the bits I don't do so well a lot better, and I've been so lucky to work with Scott for such a long period of time that I think I've learnt that it's okay to be this sort of number two and try and make that the very best you can.
What do you reckon those bits that you claim to be not so good at, what do you think they are?
Well, I've had experiences where you go and do pilots for TV shows. I mean, this is the weird thing. You sort of, you never call yourself a presenter. You do radio, you do a passion because you enjoy it. Then at some point you'll go on a TV show or a radio show and they'll start introducing you as presenter, and then suddenly you get that title. I mean, like, do you know what I mean, Amy? Like, it's this weird thing that just gets kind of bestowed on you, and I guess...
But I think depending on whatever it is you do, so I do a multitude of things, and I've done a bit of radio, I do a little bit of telly.
Yeah.
I do a lot of podcasting, but I did snowboard professionally for 12 years.
This is what I mean.
So I will always be the snowboarder.
Yeah.
That is what I'm most well known for.
Yeah, but I guess what I've learned in this job, and I wonder if I was working in another career, if it would be kind of the same mindset that I would eventually get to, is that there are kind of no rules to life. Obviously there's family that depend on you, or you have to rent your place, or you have to have enough money to be able to do those things. But what I've learned is if you want to go and try and do something, you shouldn't limit yourself off from doing it because you don't think you're going to be good enough. And that's what I've done in the past. And I think some of that has been based on experiences where I've had a shocker. Like, I've gone and done a TV pilot for a show that I kind of know I was never going to get. I didn't really understand why I was doing it. And I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. And then, unsurprisingly, you don't get it. And then you start doubting yourself and kind of you view those things as failures. And actually what I've learned is you just can't. No one person can do everything. And also, if there's something you want to explore, go and do it even as a hobby, and then if that hobby can become something else, then amazing. But
then you're winning.
Yeah, then you're winning. Like, I started getting into barbecuing in a big way and started learning how to cook and...
So you want to become a chef?
Well, this is it. No. Like, no.
Starkey, but... presenter, come barbecue extraordinaire.
But this is what I mean, like... It's very hard for people, I think, especially as you get a tiny bit older, where you have kids and there's that routine, it's hard to find time for new things. But I don't know, we should all try and explore, if we can, you know, doing something new or doing something different, because there actually are no rules, are there? I mean, there are.
There's not.
There is, it's kind of, I think, I don't know if people listen to this will ever, like, think the same as what I think with it, but it's like you sort of limit yourself sometimes. I massively limit myself through worrying too much about what other people will think, or what family members will think, or what, in my world, like what other presenters or other colleagues or
how do you manage and balance that when it comes to trying something new, even within your field? How do you eradicate that feeling?
I think you've just got to do it. I think you've just got to do these things or try and do them and just let it, you know, just see how it goes from there.
Let it flow.
Yeah,
no
maybe.
No attachment.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, it's a hard one. I feel like I'm over-explaining my brain at the moment.
I like a little deep chat.
Yeah. Yeah, it is quite deep, I guess.
Peter Crouch podcast, big football fan, grew up supporting Watford.
Yeah.
That's got to be a pinch-yourself moment.
It's incredible. And, you know, when I first got asked to do that podcast, what my ideas would be for it, and I guess this is a lot of what people might not know or see. If you listen to that podcast, it started with the idea that Peter Crouch was going to promote a book, and this producer came up to me and asked it, you know, what I would do with the podcast or what my ideas would be, and they had it kind of very different in their heads. And I said what I thought it could be and what it could become, and we went and recorded one just to see how it sounded, and I came away from that and just thought that was so fun and we should do this more, and I really thought it could do quite well. But I was blown away by how big it just suddenly got. And it just went straight to number one and seemed to stay there, and people really bought into it. And I actually found it was a place where we could talk a lot about football, but also football culture. And I think as part of that, it was, podcasts are very personal, very intimate. Like, if you choose to listen to a podcast, it's just one person listening to this podcast. It's not like your whole family sit around listening to it. And I think with that means that people's interactions with it were super personal, and people being very honest about issues that they might not even discuss with friends and family were reaching out and discussing it with us. So I found the podcast became also a place, aside from football culture, of where, say, mental health, topics around isolation, you know, they were areas that, even though it's, I would like to think, quite a funny podcast, we were sort of having those discussions as well.
And that's powerful.
Yeah, it was. I loved doing it, because also radio can be very quick. Like, radio, you're playing a lot of songs and you can only talk for a short amount of time in between songs. It's sometimes hard to get stuff across. And with the podcast, obviously we could all just sit about and talk. And that's an amazing thing to go do. And I think that's ultimately why Prince William then came on the podcast, was because it was a place that did kind of have, especially blokes, talking in a way that other things, you know, couldn't really make happen.
It's incredible how a space such as a podcast can give you that opportunity to talk,
yeah,
and connect and open up. It's
definitely, and look, I know a load of people listen to your podcast, but even just on a purely selfish level, going for a little stroll with you and having this chat, it's such a different chat to what really you can have with strangers or even friends. And
yeah,
it's so lovely to be able to do. Like, people often take the piss and joke and say, well, everyone's got a podcast. Well, maybe everyone should have one, because it's a good thing to go and do and talk. And if people want to listen to it, then great. And if they don't, that's cool as well. And I do see a lot of podcasts having great chats with people. And I find that really good and really healthy.
Especially.
It's a nice thing to go do.
When you walk as well.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
We're getting all of the fixtures here. Vic,
yeah,
D, a little conversation, and we're getting our steps in.
Yeah.
A lot of steps today.
No, it's great. It's great.
Are you much of a walker?
Yeah, I try to be. Like, I try and walk where I can, because it's too easy to just sit in a studio all day and just eat a lot of shit.
How do you manage, yeah, that balance? Because you do have an intense job, an incredible one at that, but you do have a family. So how do you find the time for you to nurture your body?
Well, I don't do that very well. And I think, if I'm being really honest, in the kind of recent past, I've felt very, like, lethargic, unfit. I find, like, here's a weird kind of, is the phrase dichotomy, I'm not sure, but like, I really miss those times where I would just go out with my mates and go get drunk and watch football, and then we'd go out and we'd have a load of drinks,
smashing Nando's
that kind of thing, but go out and have a load of drinks. And then, you know, it's not just my job, it was also having kids and stuff like that. Things changed at a bit of a different point where a lot of my mates were, because I was the first one out of my friendship group to be having a kid.
Young dad, pretty cool.
Yeah. But suddenly a big life change. And then work took up a lot of time. So a lot of the time my friends would go do things or go away on little weekends and that. And I couldn't really do that at the same point. So the balance thing, I don't think I'm getting very right, because the dichotomy is I really miss those times where we went out and got drunk. But I think because I miss them, sometimes I'll have drinks to kind of try and get a grasp, a little glimpse of what that feeling was. And I find sometimes that happens too often. I don't eat particularly healthy. And
Is that something you'd like to change?
I would like to change that, yeah. But the problem is, it feels like every time I go towards trying to change that, I either put it off or I actually don't really know how to change it. Because I'm not saying I have an issue, because I don't want to label something like that, because I don't know if I do, truthfully.
In an issue in what sense? With food? With
I just feel very imbalanced with things. You know, it's obviously early starts, and then it comes the afternoon, and I think, well, should I do a little bit of fitness? And then maybe you're a bit tired, and then you eat a load of shit, or then you have a couple of drinks because you feel good for it. But then the irony is, all of this is making me feel a tiny bit worse about myself, because I don't feel particularly fit at the moment. I don't feel particularly, like, bright and everything. So I do want to try and find a way of maybe getting into fitness a bit more, doing something which switches that up a bit, because to me this just feels like the routine of life at the moment, these types of feelings.
It's incredible how life can take you. You can be pulled in multiple directions due to different commitments, and life will give you a routine unless you install one yourself. For example, the minute you finish, you could say to yourself, before I go and stuff something greasy in the local calf around the corner, I could also walk half an hour.
Yeah.
It's exactly. About making it.
But then that gets
small
hard, and this is what I mean. Like, that gets hard for any parent that's listening to this. That gets hard then when you've got to also look after kids, do those things, try and be a half decent husband in all this. Like, my wife has to put up with so much stuff with me and my job, you know, and I'm super aware of that. It bugs me a little bit, because I don't know how to switch things up to make myself feel
I want to
better.
Help you.
But I don't feel bad. Get me wrong, I don't feel bad. I feel really lucky. I feel really good. I feel, you know, I'm very motivated in my job. I'm very motivated in my family. But I, if I'm honest, on a purely, if I look at this really selfishly.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I love my family, I love my job, and I love everything around, and I do my best that I can for it. But me personally, I don't feel totally like settled, and balance is a really good way to view it. I don't feel I see my mates enough. I don't feel I'm the very best dad I could be. Even though I know I do, I am a great dad. I feel I'm fitter than I should, like I currently am. Like, just my go-to sort of normal thing. I'm not talking about abs and like running marathons. I just mean like just a general sort of feel good, looking in the mirror kind of thing. I have a lot of these, like, I don't want to say even insecurities, because I'm not even sure it's that. I just don't feel. I want to find a way to feel the best version of myself, and I don't know. I don't quite know what that is yet.
That's the starting block, I think, is recognizing that, and then looking at what factors within your life you can not necessarily change. It's just tweak. I'm no expert, but having travelled as an athlete back in the day, it's 5 years ago now, we always had to adapt to an ever-changing environment.
Yeah.
So for us, that was snow conditions. It was different countries, different food, different gyms.
Mm.
And I think the biggest problem we all have is we look at something like a new exercise regime and we almost make it unachievable.
Yeah.
Because we set our goals too large. So it's about scaling it back. So what happens if you just walked 10 minutes further every day over a week? That's 70 minutes more exercise than you did last week.
I agree, and I think it's those little changes, and it's something that if I look at every other area of my life, these little changes, you don't realize how much they do add up to over a period of time. And you are right, it needs to go that. And I think, you know, it's like I got one of them Peloton things, and it's all good, Like, but you just go so many days and all of a sudden you're like, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow. So I don't know, I just feel in everything at the moment. I feel like everything's really good. Like, I've got the best family, I've got my dream job, I've got loads of exciting things happening. I feel so lucky for that. But I think a lot of people have this, don't they? Where
totally.
They look at it on paper and go, you're so lucky, man. Like, you've got everything. But something isn't quite balanced about yourself in a really selfish way. And if anyone listens to this is a bit like me, and you'd like to think you're not a selfish person, you push that all to one side because you go, well, actually, they're happy, da da da. I'm doing well. Like, on the face of it, I'm actually doing really well. Like, it's cool. But there is just something that is a little bit
unbalanced.
Yeah, just a little bit off. And I don't know if I like to think that, I guess the reason why I'm telling you this, we've got onto this topic, is because I'd like to think that if someone else has listened to this and sort of relates to it, it's quite nice for me, again, quite selfishly, to know that someone understands what that feels like. Get what I mean?
I think a lot of people will be able to connect and relate to this. And I also think people will be quite surprised to hear you say it. But I think being open and speaking about these things is the first step of creating any form of action.
Mm.
And hopefully, if nothing else from today, you can walk away and think, actually, you know what, I am going to take a bit of action. And that Peloton bike that I might go on tomorrow, I will go on tomorrow, even if it's for 10 minutes.
I started running, like, actually, do you know, I was last running before I started running and I had this idea of doing a marathon. So I started doing the running, and to be fair, I was getting up, I was putting in the time and I was doing it every day. And then suddenly all the work stuff changed. Like, all of a sudden my career was taking a different path. And so suddenly then you're out every night having meetings with people, dealing with things. Like, you're having to do quite a lot.
Logistic.
Drinks, meetings, another good logistic. But it was all of this stuff. Yeah. And then the running stopped. And then I look at it and go, well, that was a shame, wasn't it? Because you'd started that.
Yeah.
I think what I need to somehow do is start these things and just
out of interest, how do you
keep going with them?
Obviously, it's an early start.
I get a train back home. So, yeah, I do. I do actually do, like, you know, I will do a bit of walking. And I think you're right. I think it's so important to do these, like, steps with it. I think what it is, though, is just to kind of, you know, when you can't pinpoint something that's not quite right about yourself.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing. I think if you're having a really shitty time because you've lost a family member or there's money troubles or you've lost a job or anything like that, you know, you can pinpoint exactly what about it is making you feel a bit
uneasy. Yeah, it's
quite
specific.
Yeah, I'm just in this, like, and maybe have been for quite a while, just this kind of weird, And I also want for my family that they get the very, very best version of me. To be honest, Amy, I'm not totally sure what that is. But yeah, I also think, like, my job is really fun. And it's really, like, you do a lot of fun things and it's great. Like, the best thing about my job is I love hearing from people that... I'm not saying I love hearing from people that have had a tricky time, but I love hearing from people that say that the podcast or the radio or something I've done has just made them smile a little bit. Or those messages mean more than anything. I feel so lucky to be in a position where you have that privilege to be able to try and do that.
Enhance other people's lives in a way.
It's fucking amazing. Like,
just smile
in the tiniest bit. If you've just made someone smile, like, in the tiniest bit, that's such a wonderful thing.
But
then, like, you know, not everything is fun and games and not everything is funny. And that's, I think my wife, like, when she first met me, I think everything was like, Chris is quite fun and, like, I actually think I might be this sort of, you know, I'm sometimes aware I don't give her the very best version of myself as well. And anyway, that's me.
That's me in a tin can.
Me in a confusing bubble of...
How do you actually get through the day with these early starts? Are you a coffee man?
Yeah, well, I used to drink a lot more coffee actually when we did the afternoon show because I just keep saying yes. But I've learned that...
Less time to say yes at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I've learned if you have less coffee, it's actually... And this isn't some, like... A lot of the guys involved in the show are doing these various health things, but if you drink less coffee, it actually seems to be weirdly good for you. So I'll have like one or two in the morning.
Nice.
That's it.
You've got that under wraps then, because not many people have got that dialed. I haven't.
I'm on
4 already and it's only 11 a.m.
Listen, we've all got to do what we've got to do.
We all have our vices,
to kind of make it work, yeah.
What's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
The thing is, I love my job. So, like, getting up and getting out, I feel... actually feel okay. Like, I'm not, I'm in a really good position where I do tend to just get up and like get moving to get to work. It's hard. Like, I think everyone, you get into routines that I think I know I would miss though if they weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, I love doing this show. I love being part of Capital. I love being part of Global. But yeah, look, if you've had a big one on a Sunday, it gets a bit tricky, doesn't it? But, you know.
What does a big one on a Sunday look like? Are we down the Watford game?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
A few pints with the boys.
And exactly, if you've gone out somewhere or... Yeah. But it's okay. The thing is, I've also learned... I've done some radio where I've been so hungover, and it goes one of two ways. It either means you lose a filter and you just say stuff and like they're weirdly good shows.
Yeah.
Or you just, you know, it's just really awful. Like, it's one or the other, so...
Slogging it out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine, though. Nobody sees you. But actually, saying that, that's changing now.
I think so.
Like, there's cameras.
I think this is it. And it's so different. Like, when I started in radio, everything was just about radio. And for me, that's my focus. But everything's filmed and everything goes out. And you have to be aware of that. And you have to do so much, you know, cross-platform. And, yeah, the two, it's, you know, now more than ever, it's you have to be able to make both work.
That's,
you know?
Cool. We got that. For those people that are listening to this podcast that may be wanting to channel a similar career, they can relate to you, connect to you in many ways.
Yeah.
You've spoken very openly and honestly about your passion and desire to work in radio. For those coming up through the ranks, have you got any life mottos or quotes that you live by to help them chase their dreams?
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, look, specifically with radio or podcasts or audio in general, I would say the very best thing you can do is try not to be a presenter, but be more really interested in one particular topic and one particular niche and just go massive on that. Like, if you're so excited about it or you're super informed on it, you'll be a better presenter than learning a script and having to relay it. So my biggest advice would be find one thing that you're really into, and then things like podcasts or YouTube channels or whatever it is you want to do, they'll come naturally and you'll have better ideas for them. I think then, weirdly, if you start to... You know, produce something that resonates with an audience, even if it's niche, it only then takes one other TV show or radio station to go, well, actually, we want to feature that on our thing. And then before you know it, they're just calling you a presenter and giving you
you're out there.
3-year contract. I don't know. It's just my take on it. And the other thing would be, you know, I remember having one night where I just couldn't sleep. And I was, I'll be honest, like, I was in tears because I felt like I'd worked so hard to try and get into Radio 1 at the time, but just it wasn't happening, and I was getting rejected on kind of every front on that. And then I remember having this one night where I was like, look, at some point I've got to go and get a real job. And then all of a sudden, like 2 weeks after that, I got called in and we recorded some stuff, and it all went from there. And my thing would be, I think if you want to get into radio or audio or anything in this sort of world that I'm in, go and meet people, go and learn people. If you really are interested in getting involved in it, you know, reach out to people. You can always DM me, you know, send us a message on there.
To the DMs,
but just never
like
send
that.
A message saying, how do I get into radio? You've got to kind of figure that bit out yourself, because there isn't one route. But what you can do is be quite specific in your questions. So I can't tell someone how to go do it, but if you're already researching it and you're already kind of doing local radio or hospital radio and that, and you're struggling, get in touch and talk to people about the specific things you're struggling with, i.e. like, you know, are there any schemes you've heard of for up-and-coming presenters? Or do you know what I mean? Like, specific questions.
Yeah.
Or who's the best person to speak to in rock, you know, if you're into rock music and you want to do a show in that. So your question was dead simple, but there isn't one motto. I just want to make it so clear that if people want to get into radio, you can always send me a message and, you know, try to be really specific and try do your own research, because that's the most important thing first.
Knowledge is power, eh?
But I'm just saying, like, reach out and let us know if there's anything I can ever help with, you know?
Krista, the Fitbit says we have done 1.9 miles.
Stop it!
Go on!
That flew by, didn't it?
That's 2 miles more than yesterday by the time we walked to the end of this corner.
We can get two podcasts worth of this. I just want to say thank you so much for having us on. And look, I'm sure this podcast was meant to be a lot funnier and have more interesting stories. But for me, it's been really nice coming on here and just chatting about, you know, just some of the...
The reals?
Yeah, some of the real stuff as well. And that's been quite fun to do and a little bit different. So thank you.
Chris, thank you for your openness, your honesty and your vulnerability. I'm sure lots of our listeners are going to take a lot away from that. I know I certainly have. And for those of you that are tuning in to the audio, I really, really, really hope you've enjoyed this one. You know what to do. Plug the headphones in, keep strolling, and we will see you next week. Have an absolutely wicked week.